Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 to the Score. Juggernaut.
Good morning, Mully.
Steamroller. What do we have we decided a term today, Mr. Davis?
Front runner, NFC North front runner. You can come up with a lot of different words to describe what the Bears are after last night, but
it's a hell of a team.
You can call everybody else impressed. I think that they came in. They had a lot of pressure, a lot of attention, a lot of buildup. They delivered. I don't know how you come out of last night feeling anything but as happy as you have been as a Bears fan this late in the season in a long time.
Yes, it is really kind of an amazing thing to watch the Bears effectively. And let's be honest about it. I mean, I know the score is not indicative of the dominance the Bears showed, but it's that defense, and it is just it's overwhelming defense. That was absolutely a phenomenal performance by the Bears defense to stifle a running game, to kind of shake up a quarterback. Those interceptions were caused by pressure on the quarterback. Khalil Mack.
That's not a young quarterback.
Khalil Mack, that's a 30-year-old quarterback.
Yeah.
And you got a guy in Khalil Mack who is, can I call him the runaway defensive player of the year if he missed a couple of games? I mean, that guy, when he plays, is the best player on defense in the NFL, in the entire damn league. And Akeem Hicks lived in the backfield last night. Akeem Hicks, how many tackles for loss did
five.
He have?
He had five tackles for loss. He had a sack. He was in the backfield more often than not.
How many times did he pressure the quarterback? He just camped out in the backfield.
The biggest difference I think you saw in the defenses and in the player, one of the biggest differences that you saw a 30-year-old quarterback, as you point out, in Kirk Cousins, almost intimidated to the point where he did not want to run the ball. You know, when Mitch Trubisky got in trouble, and we'll talk a lot about the way he played,
yeah,
but when he created plays with his feet, he was willing to take chances and running downfield, wasn't afraid to get hit, wasn't afraid to make something happen. What was wrong with Kirk Cousins? It looked like he was running, looking downfield, one eye behind, looking behind his back. Who's chasing me? Who's going to hit me if I do run? I don't want to get hit. That's the kind of thing that you get when you play a defense as intimidating as the Bears defense is playing right now. You've got it from Hicks. You've got it from Mack. You've got it. Even Leonard Floyd was very active, Mully. And those linebackers.
Leonard Floyd played well, Dustin.
Yeah.
Sorry, pal.
Everybody on that defense played in a way that you've put on the tape and you're like, okay, that's the way you're supposed to do something. Everybody did something right often enough to be dominant. And that's what they are right now. They're a dominant defense.
Whew.
And when they play that well against a team that good, I don't care if you get carried away with the victory, because you can right now think that when Matt Nagy said after the game, forget what the question was, but he said after the game, we feel like we can play with anybody.
Yeah. It was a very, you know, he said we respect all of our opponents, but we feel like we can play with anybody in the NFL. I feel the same way.
You can't roll your eyes at that.
I didn't roll my eyes.
I'm saying, but you know what I mean? Now,
that's what I just did. I rolled my eyes at you when you said that you can't roll your eyes
at
that.
But, you know, you hear coaches say that kind of thing.
I know.
You dismiss it, and you're like, okay, fine.
But the point is they can actually play with anybody. They've got a balanced attack on offense. How many guys they get the ball to? 11 different players touching the ball on offense. Is that what it was? But the defense is the story. That defense is absolutely – that is an amazing thing to watch when Mac is there and the pass rush is added to everything else you got going for you.
The defense is a story. The offense was good enough. And yet the feel-good story of the night was, let's face it, Cody Parkey kicking three field goals. As much as he went through last week, you're like, that's the perfect television show's ending. You know, that is a perfect way to end that TV show, a three-hour commercial for the Bears.
I got to tell you, and I agree with you. I agree with everything you said about him, and I agree with that it's, you know, very nice to see that happy ending for him. But I honestly don't know that you want to kick another extra point again.
I don't know if you do either.
The metrics are so strong in favor of going for two, and the Bears are good at it, and it's something to consider. Maybe never doing that again. Is that too outrageous?
It's a bit outrageous for me.
We'll get into that.
We need to get into that because
I understand why it is. But
well, you're suggesting that the decision to go for two was based on metrics and not a lack of faith in your kicker.
Well, whether it's based on not based on the lack of faith in the kicker or it's because of the kicker that you're not going, all I know is that, you know, since 2015 when they put this stuff in, mm-hmm. The NFL is, you know, what, 0.095 or whatever. They hit 95% of the field of the extra points they take. If that means that if you hit 47.5% of your 2-point conversions, then you're going to be doing better or just as well as you would. So if you get to half, now you're doing better than if you can't. I understand why as a foot. that pained you. A look of pain went over your face.
Like, okay.
But nonetheless, the numbers say, and what are the Bears converting at? What is their ratio of conversion on 2-point conversions? It's very high. And I think you'd have to look at that and say, why should we even try another one?
It's a fair question to ask, especially when you see around the league this happening more and more. And Ron Rivera went for two yesterday.
Yeah.
And it backfired.
Oh, it did.
Because Cam Newton missed this receiver. You see it in college football, Maryland doing it against Ohio State. You see it all the time with more frequency than you ever would see it before. But I couldn't get past last night wondering if it had to do with lack of confidence.
The first time they did it, you were like, wow, they really don't trust the kicker to make an extra point.
They say they trust him, but do they really trust him? And I'm sitting there with sitting next to Brad Biggs, and he's like, well, what is that all about? Well, what's that all about? Yeah, you tell me. I don't know. You tell me.
You know, it's funny. I texted Biggs, like, what was that all about?
He said, Molly wants to know what this is all about. I said, tell him to call me. I'm busy. Wait till tomorrow. But I think you're right. I mean, it's something to keep an eye on because the Bears are very good at it. But how long before the defenses catch up and the Bears aren't very good at it? You know what I mean? Everything goes in cycles in the league. Everything goes –
when it works,
teams catch up.
When it works, it's obvious you should do it. When it doesn't work and it costs you a game,
right?
Yeah, it's a real problem. But it's a discussion worth having, I think.
It is.
Because it's an interesting – it's sort of an interesting element to football.
It's a fun thing to
discuss
for fans after they win 25-20 and you beat the team that puts you in the driver's seat in the NFC North. That's the fun part of the discussion. Yep. Did anyone have a better time last night than Joel Quenneville?
Wow. How about that?
Did you see
that
picture?
Yeah. That's pretty funny.
Doing shots in the parking lot.
Well, you know what? A man's got to live. A man's got to live. All right, we're going to get to all of it. We'll talk about this and more. We've got a post-game show for you effectively today. We're going to tell you everything that happened. David was there. He was in the locker room. We'll pick his brain, and we'll find out what this means and where the Bears are at after their big victory that kind of – secures their place atop the division. And don't forget, what are we now, 80 hours away? Are we less than?
It's less than 80, but I'll tell you where the Bears are at right now. They're in bed. They're sleeping. Everyone was talking about getting their sleep last night. Let's hope that they're well-rested today, although I doubt it.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score. I would say that at this point, if they don't win the division, it would be a disappointment. It would be, dare I say, a choke. Is that a fair or unfair comment to make? I think that they have taken control of the division, and they should win it now. And realistically, the goal now is to be at home, right? You want to be hosting a playoff game. That is the goal. That is the realistic goal right now for the Chicago Bears. And they're good at home, right? I mean, don't you feel good about them at home? I don't know how I feel about them if they're a wild card going on the road, especially now if they ended up losing the division. So how high can they realistically set their goals? Division winner, playoff winner, Okay, you get a game at home in the playoffs, you should be favored in it, and you should win it. And then we'll start talking from there if they can get to the NFC Championship. But I think right now, based on what we've seen and the way they played yesterday, I think there's nothing wrong with kind of demanding they win the division and expecting a home win in the playoffs.
I'm with you. I think they played well enough last night to think that this is a team that can win a postseason game, not just get to the playoffs. And I think when you start talking about, you know, whether or not you're a playoff contender and the conversation shifts to playoff seeding and matchups and potential, you know, dates that you're playing in January, that's when you know you've arrived a little bit. And I think this team has arrived and arrived last night in a loud way. So you're looking at seeding, and the Rams and the Saints are in the NFC, so you don't figure to catch those two. Those are the two teams that are likely to get a bye. But if you're the three seed, you're going to play.
Are the Rams losing some momentum? We'll find out, I guess.
We'll find out tonight.
Right?
It's a big game.
Isn't that a big question, though? Aren't they kind of losing a little
bit? I would
momentum?
Say no. It's not a big question. Okay. I don't think that you have seen enough to, I think, make that legit. Maybe you're right.
They might have looked better at the beginning of the year than they've looked in the last few weeks.
They looked really good, though, early. They looked dangerous. Now, had the Saints gained it, they look unstoppable against the Eagles.
Boy, did they beat the crap out of the Eagles.
But I think everybody would agree that those are the two teams that look like the number one and number two seeds in the NFC. If you're the Bears, you realistically put a claim last night that you're good enough to be third. And if you're good enough to be third, you're good enough to win a home game in January because the elements will favor you. The defense will give you a shot against anybody, as Matt Nagy said. So that's how good the Bears are right now. 10 games in, they're 7-3 at the top of the division. And I think that if you're saying you're not surprised, you're fibbing a little bit.
Yeah, they beat the win total already. 6 games left. They went over 6.5 wins. Already cashed that ticket. I've struggled with this most of the season because of how the schedule ended up falling, the opposing quarterbacks they face, whether you're talking about Bradford or Osweiler or even Peterman. And it's completely fair to take a look at Trubisky and have your questions because he throws that pick six. I mean, it's a completely different conversation this morning, and it was very close to happening. But if you're saying, I don't know about the Bears, I'm not sure if I'm really buying in, I get it. But I think you're just about out of excuses. Even though Trubisky wasn't playing at a very high level last night, just how dominant this defense is. And again, we've seen these dominant defenses win championships in recent history. And how high can they set their goals? I mean, the Rams got the Chiefs tonight. And Molly, I agree. I don't they've shown that you can get to the Rams. You can have the conversation about a bye. I mean, that sounds insane. But you can with this Bears team, with their 7-3 record, and you know if the Rams go down tonight, very, very well could.
Bears win there,
and you got the and you play the Rams. You could be the 2 seed. Unbelievable. How high can they set their goals? It's tough to go through those two teams in the NFC, the very top of it. But you can say Super Bowl, because what? What did last night prove? That was the game I was pointing to all season. This is what I want to see. They showed me. They showed me that they can play with anybody. I agree with Matt Nagy. I'm not predicting a run to the Super Bowl or anything, but they can set their goals that high because there isn't a team that I see on the schedule and say, they have no shot against them. They have no chance. So you can go that high.
You must be high if you're talking Super Bowl already, Joe. I know you just had some time off there, and you look great. You got a lot of sun down in Disney.
I didn't.
For you.
I just said not
you're
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl.
I said they can beat anybody.
How was it, Joe? Did you have fun?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that's great.
You know they can't.
Did you go
beat
on
anybody.
That California ride? That thing is unbelievable.
I saw you were holding up a sign on Splash Mountain. They're not going to let you back in the park now anymore. Is that you?
Yeah, I did get some tweets asking if that was me.
Make Dustin great again?
I think that they can beat anybody if they play.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
The way they did last night defensively in terms of contributions from so many different players. And of course, it starts at the line of scrimmage. I mean, Mack and Hicks yesterday were just both completely unbelievable. But their presence and their ability to, you know, make the quarterback shook. Kirk Cousins was completely scared last night. Just he didn't know what to do left and right. I mean, he was just feeling that hot breath on him all game long, as Dustin would put it. And when you have those two guys playing that well right there at the line of scrimmage, it makes everybody else better. I mean, opening up opportunities for the defensive backs to get pretty easy interceptions. They could have had another one earlier in the game. I think it was Callahan that just hit him right in the hands and he dropped it. But they could have forced even more turnovers than they did. And even though Trubisky didn't have his best game of the season, there's so much talent around him in terms of guys like Robinson and Miller, who was great yesterday, I thought. You know, Burton didn't have his best game of the season, but he's always a threat. Even had Shaheen before he went back into injury land, catch a two-point conversion. So you have so much talent around the quarterback that you're going to be able to live with games like yesterday where he doesn't look, you know, as great as he did against Tampa or Detroit, and you're going to be able to carry him through some of these growing pains. And I think that's the most promising thing for this Bears team. They don't rely on just one thing because they have so much in the coaching staff. I mean, Matt Nagy's absolute masterclass with his play calling yesterday. So definitely going to be a disappointment if they don't win the division at this point. I mean, hell, they're 7-3, and nobody else really below them in the standings look like world beaters by any stretch of the imagination. So another big game coming up in how many hours is that, David? I think it was 78.
77 hours, 57 minutes, and 24 seconds, Mark.
Who's counting?
Wow. We should keep updating that all week.
I have my phone set. Now remember, I'm the one who did the math, so you might want to double check it. But right now it's 77 hours, 57 minutes, and 11 seconds. Mark.
I would like to note that while you did the math, Cody Parkey did hit the game sealing field goal.
And it was a game sealing field goal.
He did, absolutely. The guy called it straight. So for those that question the analysis, they're absolutely wrong.
He did say 24-20, ended up 25-20.
And, you know, maybe fix your own house because the guy did it right.
The field goal did make the lead insurmountable, if you will.
And out of respect for Cody Parkey, we will not play the doink sound effect all week
long. Oh, man.
We're retiring it for the week.
There was a nice piece on NBC last night about doink, about how John Madden created words and spelled words that didn't exist.
So, onomatopoeia, right?
That's right.
Words. Oh, I'm really lost.
Onomatopoeia is words that are sounds.
Like splat.
Crash.
Ah, okay.
You know, splash.
I thought those were like comic book words. That's how I would have described it.
Can you wait till commercial?
I'm a gonna pia. Is that what you're saying? Onomana.
I don't know.
Onomatopoeia.
Okay,
let me write that down. I can
don't pay
go
attention
back to
me.
Google machine after the show.
I'm sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt with a compliment.
You're really good. Kevin's nudging me that I need to pick up the pace.
We got to turn the mic on.
We can't have any fun here. After you use my words about the hot breath and all that. 77 hours, 55 minutes, 40 seconds, Mark. The Bears are really, really good. Their goal should be, I think, Mully, you said it. I mean, the division is, at this point, if you lose the division, you'll be really disappointed. And the goal should be hosting a divisional playoff game. That should be the goal. But the first goal, and I know this, I mean, I'm a producer, but I'm going to go coach speak on you. Okay, it's in 77 hours, 55 minutes, and 12 seconds, Mark. You got to beat the Lions. And I know mathematically you don't have to beat the Lions, but that's a game you can't just let go because you got a game and a half lead right now in the division. That's a game you should win, and you need to win in order to reach these big goals that we're talking about as we're answering this question.
Dustin, great question.
What or who was the biggest difference against the Vikings, and what will you remember most about that game?
Well, I think if you want to talk about collectively, you've got to look at the Bears' front seven. I think that was the difference in the game. The Vikings' inability to handle the Bears up front, where they lost the battle of the line of scrimmage almost every series. And, yeah, there was Khalil Mack making, you know, everybody in his way. It seemed like it was just a nuisance that he would push out of it with one hand and knock people over. But Akeem Hicks was the most dominant interior defensive lineman, I thought. Five tackles for loss, a sack. He was unblockable, and I think he probably had his best game this season. And the season's, yeah, it's a season full of good games, and it's a Pro Bowl-type season. And I think overall, the biggest difference was the Bears front seven's dominance of that game. Now, what will I remember most? Look, this is where I led my column on 670thescore.com. It's what the image you think of the Sunday night football. When you saw Cody Parkey kick that field goal, the game-sealing field goal, if you will, the one that from 48 yards out, that no matter what they thought of him before that, no matter how much they doubted him and going for two after both touchdowns and all the things he went through during the week with the chopper chase and all those things, the way his teammates responded showed a genuine affection for the guy, showed a guy who's been here for 5 minutes, like, okay, like a lot of other guys on that roster, they are coming together in a way that it means something. I don't know what it means yet, but I think that it was meaningful and memorable. And so I will remember this game last night, no matter what the score was, for the way the Bears celebrated after Cody Parkey knocked that field goal through the uprights and not at the uprights.
Yeah, that's a good answer, David. For me, the biggest difference against the Vikings was the defense, in particular the defensive line. And I am going to just because he's our guy and we're going to have him on, I'll call that one the Akeem Hicks game. I will say that the fact that he was living in the backfield, and you just look at the statistics of the game, and he had 5 tackles for loss, as we mentioned in the first segment. He's all over this stat sheet, and that is difficult for an interior defensive lineman to do, because you're usually taking on doubles and you're usually knocking people around. Now, don't ask him about how he benefits from having a guy like Khalil Mack there, because Mack was fantastic. I thought Eddie Jackson's play was huge. Joe mentioned if Mitch had thrown the pick six, we'd be having a different conversation. Hey, if they hadn't thrown the pick six, right? If the Bears didn't get the pick six, we'd be having a different conversation, because that erases 8 points. So I thought that the defensive numbers were just extraordinary from that front. And in particular, it was 2 guys. It was Akeem and it was Khalil Mack. And I think I've seen Mack have better games, as dominant as he was. And again, every time you snap the ball, you got to know where that guy is. But Akeem is the guy that's taking most advantage of that. And he was living in the backfield. The tackles for loss, he blew up an early third down play that was just phenomenal to split guys. He's like running sideways and they can't block him, and he gets a hand on the back and they bring him down. And, that sort of performance from him is the difference in that game to me. So I'm going to go with Akeem Hicks.
Yeah, the second people were saying, wow, where's Mack? What's going on? Force fumble recovery, game changer in the red zone. Vikings moving the ball down to the 14. I mean, that's what you get with him. So it isn't fair if you omit either guy, but I'll lean towards Khalil Mack. Going into last night, he was the second favorite for Defensive Player of the Year. Wouldn't shock me if he's even with Aaron Donald when those odds come out today, especially with what he did on a national stage, just taking over there. What I'll remember most about this game, I was sick of hearing about it. Everybody was sick of hearing about it, but it was about Cody Parkey. It was. It just reminded me of what the Bears were in the 80s with the whole stuff with the chopper. And then usually when the media is talking to the kicker, it's not great, but he's standing there talking to Michelle Tafoya right after the big win last night. So what I'll remember most is that was the Cody Parkey bounce back game.
I hate to give the same answer as you guys did, but Akeem Hicks was probably the best player on the field last night. I mean, they didn't know what to do with him. They couldn't block him. He was in their heads. He was getting to players behind the line of scrimmage, and he probably will be in the Pro Bowl this season. I mean, I think at this point he is establishing himself as one of the premier defensive players in the NFL as an entire entity.
Hey, Kev, take it easy. The Bears might be preparing for a big game ahead of the Pro Bowl, so they might have to skip it.
Well, just being invited is an honor, of course. But, this isn't really new for Akeem Hicks. I know maybe yesterday was his best overall game, certainly the biggest spotlight game in which he's played during his time here with the Bears. But since he was brought in a couple of seasons ago, he's been this guy. He's been the same player now for, his third year with the Bears, and we've all known about it. Last year even, we were calling him a Pro Bowl snub because he had such a good season. But you put better players around him, you get more spotlight on him, and he will be recognized as one of the top linemen in the NFL at the end of the season, I think, and yesterday maybe, even though, like I said, around here we knew how good Akeem Hicks was and has been for a while, but yesterday I think it's not just Khalil Mack, and that was the message to a nationwide audience that, yeah, this Akeem Hicks guy, he's pretty damn good too.
Hicks had just a monster of a ball game, just absolutely a monstrous game. And I'm going to remember that for a long time. I hate to bring Hicks up at the same time. I apologize in advance, Akeem, if you're up listening, coming in from a late night out. But that play where Mac just absolutely throws a 330-pound guy, just like literally throws him like I would throw a towel into the laundry room. I mean, just that guy should be so embarrassed. I mean, that's just wow. I mean, the power, just the pure power of those two guys is unbelievable. That's what I will remember.
And with all due respect to everything, didn't we talk about that line being hot garbage?
Yeah, we said.
And now we're talking about the Bears' defensive line. I mean, that was the matchup they had to win, and they did.
And they did it. That's the thing, though. They did it.
In a landslide.
Fifth different offensive line combination for the Vikings.
Yeah. Well, that's a great question.
What is Matt Nagy saying by going for two twice?
This segment's brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter.
I think what he's saying is that his field goal kicker is, 30 of 32 on extra points based on missing two of them last week. That's a 91.8% conversion rate, which means basically if you make 46% of your two-point conversions, that is not a very high percentage that you are going to do as well as you would points-wise with the kicker. So why not get yourself the extra points? And the extra points made a difference. It was a big deal to get those points. I mean, you add those up. When you're kicking field goals and you still got 14 points at halftime, that's pretty damn good. Those extra points do come in handy and they do matter. And I think that the math of it supports it. And maybe it's something that he's wanted to do all along. Maybe he's had these plays and he just kind of they're itching to call some of these and they've got them all prepared. And why not roll them out? Because they got 800 plays. Here's a couple of them that we've been dying to run, and we can run them here. I thought when they went for the first one, I was confused, and then they converted it with ease, and I thought, okay, that makes sense. The second one was really cutesy, and a guy jumps up and makes a play on it, and they convert it again. So again, the conversion rate is so good for them. They're perfect, I believe, on 2-point conversions this year. That's 100%, and again, 91.8% on your so you need to get to 46 and you're 100. That's pretty damn good.
Good numbers, supportable metrics. Let me ask you this. If Cody Parkey doesn't hit four uprights a week earlier, does Matt Nagy go for two twice after touchdowns?
I would say definitely not. Only the difference, David, is that they probably were planning on going for two because they were successful the week before after he had missed one. And then it probably is something in the back of his mind and it gave him an excuse. But I think the fact that they let him kick three field goals would indicate that they haven't lost complete faith in him.
I would think it would indicate that, but I think game situations dictated that was a smart play to kick the field goal.
I agree. They didn't go for it.
I just don't know, and I'm not ready to buy yet that this was all about the aggressiveness that Matt Nagy brought to Chicago and why this makes sense for him, because I really believe, and I'll get past this, maybe I won't. I really believe that if Parkey was perfect a week earlier, we're not talking about two-point conversions that worked for the Bears. And I think it's great that they worked, and I think the metrics are supportable. And this may be the way that he goes. But I don't think that Matt Nagy was looking at a chart when he decided to go for two twice. I think he was following his instinct. He was listening to his football conscience. He was doing anything he could to avoid what happened a week earlier when the guy missed extra points and put him in a bind. So I think what he was saying is, I don't fully believe in my kicker. I'm smart enough to overcome it and just watch how clever we are.
I know we want an answer. We want to know, well, which is it? Is it because of the math or is it because of the lack of faith in your kicker? It's both. You can justify it because of the math. But if Parkey hits everything a week ago, he's probably not trying this last night. So, I mean, last week during the game, when he was doinking everything, I said, just go for two every time. Seriously. You have Nagy on your side. Don't you believe in this offense enough that they're going to convert one of every two-point attempts? And I never thought they would do it because of how a lot of NFL coaches are, but Nagy's a little bit different, and I would like to see it. Now, certain situations, say you're up 16 late, I'll take the extra point just to go up by 17 points there. But I did not have a problem with it, but it's both. He's saying both. It was about a lack of faith, and it was also it made sense because the numbers tell you it does.
Yeah, just statistically, it makes sense. And, you know, people don't want to hear about numbers sometimes or God forbid, use the M word or the word analytics, and people start to get freaked out and they light their torches and they want to go back 50 years when everything was more idiotic. But this just makes complete sense. It's just mathematically, you have a better chance of accruing more points over the game if you go for two every single time. And Joe's absolutely right. You do have to factor in, you know, time of the game, situations, and it's not just a complete auto run type thing here, but it does bear out over the course of a game and over the course of a season that you will have more points if you go for two. And with this offense, with all of the options that they have, with all of the innovative play calls, and with all of the red zone threats that they have, it was music to my ears and my eyes and everything else last night, seeing how aggressive they were going for two, and I hope they keep doing it.
I don't mind if they keep doing it, but I think Joe probably nailed it the best. I think it's both. I think there is some lack of faith in the kicker. Listen, they had to call a timeout to decide whether or not talk it through what to do with that 48-yarder, right? That they had to do that. They weren't sure. And if he had confidence in the kicker, that wouldn't have been a thing. It would have been immediately go. Right, there wouldn't even have been a moment of hesitation. But if you're able to execute these things, that's another thing that now the defense has to prepare for, right? It's another thing to keep the other team on their toes. So I think it's a mix of both, and I think we'll find out this week on the first time the Bears. Listen, you're going to get the answer to the question the first time the Bears score a touchdown, assuming they score a touchdown against the Lions, right? So as soon as that happens, if they go for two, I think he doesn't trust the kicker for some reason. But
they are 35 touchdowns they've scored. Okay, the last three are all 2-point conversions, and previous to that, it was 30 of 32. So the last, they're 3 for 3 in 2-point conversions. It's the last three after the kid missed the second of his two misses on the year.
That's a good question, Ron.
Did Alex Smith's gruesome injury remind you of Joe Theismann's 33 years ago? Is the NFL safer, and are we more careful about showing such clips these days?
Well, one at a time. Alex Smith's gruesome injury reminded me of Joe Theismann's 33 years ago, which is kind of eerie because it happened on the same day 33 years earlier. It reminded me because Joe Theismann reminded us of it. Because
Joe.
He went to the Twitter machine.
He reminded Joe.
Yeah, and he said, Alex's leg is exactly like mine 33 years ago. Ooh, okay. Thank you for bringing that unpleasant memory to the front of our heads. But yeah, it was there to watch. It was gruesome as Theismann's. I don't think we've become desensitized to injuries of that nature. I think it is safer to be a quarterback in the NFL today. I think the players are bigger, faster, stronger, but I also think the rules have changed to protect quarterbacks. You saw some of that last night. You see it every week. I mean, guys can't fall on a quarterback the wrong way without getting a penalty. So I do think it's safer. Are we more careful with showing clips that are as gruesome as probably there's some more awareness, but I also think it's easier to find because of social media. You if you want to see what happened to Alex Smith yesterday and it wasn't available to you on your favorite highlight show, you could have easily found it on your phone.
Took me 2 seconds
okay,
to find it. Yeah.
Thank you. So I think it's maybe more sensitivity shown by whoever's making the producers choosing highlights, but it's much more accessible too.
Yeah, I think that I think you're right, David. I think the fact that it reminded Joe Theismann of his injury is very interesting. And Joe, you know, what I remember about that is very famous. You know, he gets hit, the leg is broken, and he's laying there and he sits up and he starts screaming, "I'll be back, I'll be back," in perfect Joe Theismann fashion. And I think it was Pepper Johnson like leaned over and said to him, "Not today, you won't." I don't think Alex Smith was doing anything like that. I don't think there was any moment like that. I thought it was classy. They obviously put some kind of air cast on the leg, and he had to have emergency surgery. I mean, that looked grotesque. It was awful. The legs just bent in the wrong way, and it got caught underneath him, and that's probably the end of Alex Smith. I just, as a professional football player, which is really sad, I don't see him coming back from that severe an injury at his age. So it certainly Joe couldn't come back from that injury.
Are you surprised it doesn't happen more?
It was a blitz right up the middle, and he got buried, and we've seen that happen 1,000 times in football. It's just the leg got planted the wrong way, and when the guys went over him, it that was the end of that. I mean, I guess I am surprised it doesn't happen more. It seems like it could happen more because it seemed like a fairly routine play where you got a free runner and he's going to on a blitz and he's going to hit the quarterback. So it was rough though. I mean, it was hard to watch, you know, when he was being put on the cart and taken off, and he was, you know, applauding the applause he was getting and giving a thumbs up to the crowd. And that's going to be really interesting to see what happens with that team, because I couldn't understand how they were winning to begin with. And then you lose your quarterback. They're in a good position in that conference, but boy, they're in a rough position in their lives. So I do think the game has gotten safer. I think the rules have changed. But again, that was a fairly routine play. And I do believe we're more careful about showing those clips. And you're absolutely right, though. Anybody that wants to can go look and see it. And you know, you can see the injury happen, and then you can see how his leg looks when he's sitting on the ground. And I don't know why you'd do that, but it was very similar to the Theismann injury.
Yeah, and now the Redskins have to turn around and play with Colt McCoy on Thursday against the Cowboys. And that, oh, God, is the NFC East just awful.
Absolute garbage.
When I saw the play, it didn't immediately remind me of Theismann, but then Joe's tweet was everywhere, and it's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess you're right. It's still football, so I don't know that we're ever going to say that it's safe, but you just watched Trubisky scramble last night again and again, and I was actually thinking, wow, the game is so much safer. He actually feels safe out there because he does a pretty good job of giving himself up at a moment's notice, and we were kind of waiting for it to happen, whether it was out of frustration or whatever, the Harrison Smith penalty. And it did end up happening because nowadays you touch that quarterback, you are getting flagged. So I believe it is safer on some level, but it's still football. I'm never going to say that it's completely safe. So I was watching Red Zone when it happened, and Scott Hansen said, okay, turn away if you don't want to see this gruesome injury. But then later on, they decided never to show it again, and they made that announcement that they were not going to show it again. So I think that was the right decision. Like you guys said, you can seek it out if you really want to see it. But I think you prepare the audience. So if you don't want to see it, turn away. We'll show it once, and that's probably about it.
Yeah, I think that there's some sort of, I don't know if I want to say duty or responsibility to show it at least one time, because, you know, it happened. You can't ignore the fact that it happened, and you can't, you know, distract people away from the fact that this is a very violent and gruesome game, despite the fact that they are trying to make it safer. And it is safer than it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, certainly, but it is still, you know, these guys are incredibly fast, they're incredibly strong, and you're going to have, you know, when there's 22 guys out there, you're going to see stuff like this sometimes. It was absolutely horrific. I'm not usually a squeamish person, but I watched it, I think, one time, and I said, okay, I'm good. I don't need to see that ever again. So, you know, you do have to acknowledge it, and you can't pretend it didn't happen. So I do think you do have to show it if you're one of the networks. But I do like what they did on the Red Zone with the disclaimer and saying, if you are squeamish at all, please turn away, because it was absolutely brutal. Yeah, it looked too much like that Joe Theismann thing, and it makes you think that Alex Smith might not be playing anymore, which is disappointing.
I think the only similarity and the irony is that it happened to a Washington quarterback on that day, 33 years later to the date. I thought the Theismann thing was much more gruesome. I agree that with the Red Zone handled it from telling you to look away, but I don't think you have to stray away from it, and especially if it happened in your market or in your division, that then you're going to show it because it's the news. It is what it is, but you should give the disclaimer. But I don't think you need to play it over and over and over and over, and it shouldn't lead any of the highlight shows out there. But it's part of the story, so you should play it with a disclaimer.
Don't ask me about that again.
Should Fred Hoiberg's job be in jeopardy following the Bulls' string of lopsided losses? How does how a team loses matter? And are blowouts worse than narrow defeats?
Yeah, how a team loses matters, and blowouts are worse than narrow defeats. I mean, it's not, listen, it's, you know, the object is to win. And I understand what's going on with the Bulls right now, which is they've got a ton of injuries. They don't have the talent. They can't go out and compete on a nightly basis. But my goodness gracious, you have to have effort. You have to have people trying to do their jobs. I mean, there's not even the good kind of intention of winning with this group. It is pathetic. I mean, good God, Fred. I know your system is to get out in the open court and to get everybody running, but all that's happening is you're missing shots and the other team scores every time they touch the ball. I've never seen anything like it. This is really, you know, Fred should not be fired based on the limited talent that he has available to him and the fact that they can't win any games. But Fred, you might want to think about getting someone in there that could at least get people back and in the way a little bit. So it's totally unfair to talk about Fred's job, but guess what? Let's have a talk about Fred's job. It's awful.
It's not all about winning. It's about competing, though, and the Bulls are not competitive, and they weren't over the weekend. Casey Johnson, our guy who's as fair as they come, wrote this on Saturday morning in the Tribune. The Bulls are shorthanded, struggling, and have players filling roles for which they may not be equipped, but some losses transcend the norm. Some losses reflect poorly on the entire organization and could lead to the blame game. Friday marked such a loss. And you know what? Saturday marked another one. And when you have two in a row like that, you start to worry. You start to look at what you can do. Change for the sake of change sometimes becomes an option. It's not fair, but pro sports are not fair. And blowouts are worse than narrow defeats, because with narrow defeats, it looks like at least you're
trying.
You're playing some level of defense, and the Bulls aren't really doing anything right now. When Zach LaVine went down Saturday, you just didn't have a shot, and they didn't compete. And it's a dire situation. It's unfair. They haven't seen all those players together enough to have a full judgment, but you might not get to that point.
Did you guys see the video clip of Hoiberg just a couple minutes into the second half of that Toronto game?
Yeah,
just,
he spoke for every Bulls fan in the arena.
Yes, absolutely. The last three losses, now these are against three of the best teams in the East, and it, as if we didn't know, it just reminds you how far away they are. But yeah, these blowouts are so much worse than what happened against Milwaukee. I mean, you're up by 18 at halftime, and then you end up getting blown out. It goes completely the other way. Should his job be in jeopardy? I wonder. So if you have a different head coach, how much different is the situation with all of the injuries they have and the lack of talent they have? But they just don't, right now, it just doesn't even look like they belong in the same court with most of these teams.
Well, they don't. I mean, especially when you're talking about Boston and Milwaukee and Toronto, and especially against Toronto when you don't have Zach LaVine or Lauri Markkanen or Chris Dunn or Denzel Valentine or Bobby Portis. It's just, it's kind of unfair to expect this team with all of their injuries that they have right now to be able to compete with the top teams in the Eastern Conference. Now, they have a good chance to turn it around Wednesday. They're hosting Phoenix. Phoenix is pretty bad. I don't know when these guys are going to start to come back. I mean, it was another couple weeks for Markkanen. Seems like that timetable just keeps getting extended, which is really disappointing because I want to see him play. He's been very funny on Twitter, though, in fairness, in his absence, so it's not all for nothing. But no, I don't think this is on Fred Hoiberg, not this particular stretch. It's just a really weird quirk of the schedule aligning with a lot of bad injuries, and I don't think it's on the head coach, not at this point.
Well, speaking of Markkanen, we have another City Edition jersey to give away this morning, guys. A Markkanen City Edition jersey, so that's pretty cool.
Those are beautiful.
Great looking jerseys.
Really cool. Really cool giveaway, so be with us all morning for your chance to win that. As far as, if you know, to KC's point that David pointed out so well, if you weren't going to fire Fred Hoiberg Friday night, Saturday morning, then he's probably going to coach the rest of the season. You know, Saturday's a whole other story. But that, when, and Joe, you, it was actually, I think, 22 was the high. They were up by as many as 22. In the third quarter, they scored 17 points. It was an absolute, just an embarrassment. Just call, use every timeout you have in the second half, okay, and get a group of guys in that'll at least put a hand in somebody's face, will move their feet, will jump in the air and try to play a little bit of defense. So Fred Hoiberg, in my mind, is safe until at least the end of the year if you weren't going to fire him Friday night, Saturday morning.
And yet they were still more competitive than Illinois.
Speaking of guys that you got to look at their job.
Has Iowa ever scored that many points in a Big Ten game before? It's Iowa. They don't score points like that.
I know. Sorry.
Artie Nickerson quit just in the nick of time.
The Illini play at Northwestern.
Yes,
they do. That's the last home game of the year for the Cats.
Time to.
It'd be a fun celebration for the seniors. Wow. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw at the Score.
Go Fitzy, go Cats.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.